It's the most important day on the broadcast calendar for 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL. It's the 2014 WCHL Community Forum. 10 hours live from the WCHL studios in Chapel Hill, featuring more than 60 members of our community here to discuss and debate a variety of local issues. The WCHL Community Forum is presented by Orange County Government. Our forum is also brought to you by Jersey Mike's, Vietri, the UPS Stores, and Durham Technical Community College. Join us now on WCHL and streaming live on our website, chapelboro.com. Now, hour six of the WCHL Community Forum, K-12 education. Here's your moderator, D.G. Martin.
Well, welcome to hour six of the 2014 WCHL Community Forum. I'm D.G. Martin. We've got a lot of interest. I think if people care about anything in this area, they care most about our schools. And some of them are bursting at the seams, and there seems to be a stretch on the budget. Our schools are in need of expansion and repairs, and our budgets have taken a hit in recent years, and it looks like there might be an even bigger hit this year. And there are a whole host of other challenges, problems, opportunities that we face, and we've got a great panel of experts and interested people to help us wrestle with those. First of all, Tom Forsella, superintendent of the Chapel Carrboro City Schools, no longer the new superintendent. He is the old, long-time serving. Along with him from the Chapel Hill Carrboro Schools is Arisa Adkins, who's the human resources director. Chuck Hennessy is a teacher and is the president of the Chapel Hill Carrboro Association of Educators. Jeff Hall is a PTA council president. Is Jeff right here beside me? And then two citizen leaders of our school system, James Zeta Bedford and Donna Coffey, who are the folks who tell our superintendents and our staff what to do. Welcome. Welcome to all of you. And, you know, where should we begin with the challenges that you face in our school system? Everything from the calendar and snow days to an upcoming challenge on the budget situation. And James Zeta Bedford, could you bring us up to date on the budget for your school system? What's going on here?
Well, we start July 1 with a budget deficit of about $3.8 million, and that's a continuation budget, although it does incorporate, we hope, some salary increases for our teachers. And that's primarily due to cuts at the state level.
So you start out with a shortfall. You've proposed a budget which asked the county commission to take care of that shortfall, and everybody is kind of biting their lips saying, are we playing in a real ball game? And what is somebody has sent in a question, what is your plan B, what is your plan C, what is your plan D on this?
Sure.
What are your thoughts on that?
Last Thursday, we had our administration brought a first round of cuts, which had been revised after our public dialogue and discussion, a focused dialogue the prior week, that incorporates about $800,000 of cuts. And then there's round two that is a potential set of $2.2 million worth of cuts. So we are preparing for Plan A and Plan B. We also know that our county commissioners do the very best that they can to fund education. And this may be a year, I think it's a year that the 48.1% target will need to be exceeded, knowing that they have to balance other needs.
You want to explain, tell us what the 48.1?
There's a target with the county budget to try to fund education at 48.1%. And that's been, Donna, you know better how long, that's been around for a number of years.
Since about 2000.
Is it a little bit different with Orange County Schools than what is your all's budget proposal, and how does it stand now?
Our budget proposal will consist of us, the Orange County Board of Education, requesting from the commissioners just shy of $200 per student increase. We want to look at replenishing what we've previously reduced in past years because of state cuts. A lot of those are along the lines of putting more money into our literacy programs, our math programs, those kinds of things.
Well, how do you stand with, do you feel like you have a good chance of having the kinds of things that you need funded this year?
Well, what I will say is that I believe Orange County commissioners have a very long-standing commitment to public education. I think we're very fortunate to live in this county. I was the budget director for Orange County local government for 12 plus years and spent 30 years of my professional life there. And I know that public education funding is their top priority.
What are you going to lose that your parents are going to be upset about?
Right now, we don't have anything that we're going to lose as far as what we're requesting from the commissioners.
Right.
We have asked staff to bring back to us in their list of requests, or our list of requests that are going to the commissioners. We have asked staff to prioritize those, the requests that we're going to make. And so it would be up to the board to decide where those reductions would be once the county commissioners decide on funding.
Let me turn to Tom Fasella. You've got two diplomatic board members who are not going to pick a fight with the county commission at this stage at all in terms of funding. And you must appreciate that you've got this kind of leadership. But at the same time, what are you worried about in terms of the kinds of financial if it's not a financial crisis, what are some of the restrictions that you're going to face?
Yeah, and I agree that our fight is not with our county commissioners. We've had that support and over the years, but there's only so much funding to go around. I think if I had to pick a fight, we'd probably be at another level. We're in this predicament that we are because of reductions that have come over time from the state. We've had to reduce central office staff, regular staff, programs over the last several years since the Great Recession began, and in our case, we've hit the cliff, and that's why we're in the state we are right now, because we don't have a fund balance or a rainy day fund to go to, and that's why we're in a very difficult situation.
Well, Mr. Superintendent, help me with this, because this is what the people are calling in asking us to deal with, and that is that I think everybody who's dealing with understands that we're in an unrealistic situation in terms of the likelihood that the county commission can adopt the proposed budget of the Chapel Hill Carrboro's schools. And so they're saying, and you've got to staff this and bring recommendations to your board. What are you going to do when the county commission, as you expect, says no? We're not going to fund it. We wish we could. We love you as you love us, but we can't do it.
No, and we have, as Jim Zetta has said, come up with a list, and that list does include staff. It actually includes program reductions. In the same vein, we're trying to do business a little bit differently and be more efficient. But if I have to mention one thing that I know a number of people will speak to on this panel, the big issue for us and throughout the state is what's happened to our teaching force, teacher salaries, and you don't have to, you open a paper every day and there's some issue with that. In our budget is $1.5 million because we are anticipating a pay increase from the state level, and we're glad to have that in there, and we want to keep that in there. In order to do that, though, we have to make reductions in other places. So it's like you're between a rock and a hard place. Do you keep the programs? Do you keep the staff? But then again, knowing that teachers have not had raises and we need to begin to fund that, or we're going to lose more and more teachers to other states.
Some systems have reported in great detail the actual loss of teachers. We don't seem to be in a panic. We're concerned, but not in a panic situation, both in the Orange County and Chapel Hill Carrboro schools, because in the past we treated our teachers well. Do you see... can you describe an emergency, or have you been able to hold on to the best of your teachers?
No, we have resignations that have come in already with teachers explaining that they're not going to be here next year. Ms. Atkins would know the numbers better than I do, but going to other states, Virginia, South Carolina, because of pay, we had one of the forums we had the other night, two teachers that came here from Indiana because of quality life and they really wanted to live here. They're going back to Indiana because they can make together $30,000 more in Indiana than they can make in North Carolina.
Per year, per teacher?
For the family.
Well, let's ask Ms. Atkins to... You're online and trying to hold on to these teachers. What are you doing to keep them?
Absolutely. Well, first to tell you, just in terms of our numbers, we have about 56 resignations and retirements, which is about the same as last year at this time. However, I meet with principals in our HR department every year in April, and I can tell you one of the things that's really frustrating is we're almost in a holding pattern with teachers because teachers are waiting to hear something from the state, what they're going to do in terms of teacher pay. So it's almost more difficult for us because we haven't received some of the resignations and retirements because they're waiting for the legislature to do something. I think that that would help them, possibly stay. But we've been hearing story after story after story of teachers that are considering going back home. And some of those states that used to be our most fertile grounds for recruitment, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, unfortunately, we're shipping those teachers back, or they're in a holding pattern, but they have told us, yes, we're strongly considering going back. So it is an emergency situation. It is a dire situation. During our opening of school report in October, we mentioned many of these things, and now we're here at the point at the end of the school year, and it is a critical need right now.
Legislature is not going to have a budget until sometime probably in late June or July at best, and so we won't know for sure, I guess, about that. How are you persuading your teachers to hold off until the middle of the summer to get an answer?
Sure. You know, one of the things that we're so fortunate to have is some resources that other districts may not have the luxury of having. For example, we talk to those teachers individually. Every time somebody resigns, we try to have an exit interview with them to see if they could stay. So it's that building that personal relationship, seeing from teacher to teacher, case by case, you know, what is it that is causing them to leave. But the other thing is that to kind of talk to them about some of the benefits. Like, we have full-time teacher assistants in kindergarten through third grade and half-time teacher assistants fourth and fifth grade. Many other districts don't have that luxury. So people, for example, who may consider going to another district, those are the kinds of conversations that we have. We try to have those individual one-on-one conversations to see if there's anything that we could do to make them stay.
Well, I want to ask the teacher here, Chuck Hennessy. You are a teacher in our schools, and you also have a leadership position as president of the Chapel Hill Carver Association of Educators. Give us a report from your from where you sit and who you talk to.
I talk to teachers across the district at all of our schools, as well as at teachers across the state. It seems to be a simple situation of having the best students, the best colleagues, the best families, and the best system. But at the top of that, the control of our actual careers is what's driving a lot of people out of the state.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
When you're talking about legislation that basically takes away your right to due process, where previous to now, if you ran into a problem, it was very easy for you to simply say, okay, I understand something's not right. Can I ask what's wrong? We've lost that right to due process, even though most recently there has been a court case over in Guilford County that has declared that unconstitutional. Still, that is on the docket, and that is part of the same lack of raises and the same.
So you're more worried about the process than the money? Are you sure you want to say that?
It's more of, we never know what's going to hit us next. So we're dealing with process, we're dealing with money, we're dealing with our professional status. So even though we are extremely supported by many factions, like I said, the people who control our actual profession, that's what makes it most difficult for us. So we hear teachers saying that they're looking for jobs. We hear teachers saying that they're considering early retirement. We look at statistics for years from the State Department of Public Instruction that show us that we hovered around 12% losing teachers each year. We're at 14% now, but the big difference here is that half, as opposed to 5% in years past, half of those are the 15-year veterans. Those are the seasoned people. When you start to lose you're the best and the brightest, then it makes education overall very bleak for everyone, especially kids.
Well, Thanks, Chuck. Well, we got a representative of the parents sitting beside us, and Jeff Hall. What is, from your perspective, what are the things about the many things that we've already talked about that worry you the most?
Well, I would say as far as teachers leaving the district, from a parent perspective, it is a crisis. Whenever you have a teacher that is connecting with your child, making a difference in your child's life, and then you find out from your kid that they're not going to be back next year because they had a better paying opportunity in Virginia or Tennessee. We've had teachers leave to go to South Carolina. I mean, it feels ridiculous from a parent standpoint that here in the education state that we're losing our best teachers to other places simply because we're not respecting them as professionals and we're not paying them a fair market wage. That's not right. And as Tom said, I think it was a great point. You know, our fight is with Raleigh. That's where the cuts have come from. That's where the real crisis in education in the state is located. The fights that we end up having with the Board of County Commissioners or with the Board of Education or with Dr. Forcella are all a function of the initial cuts, which are being made, you know, an hour away.
Well, do you all have other comments that you'd like to add to this financial crisis that we're all trying to face together? And yeah, Jamesetta.
I think it's actually that's just the result of a very coordinated attack on public education at the state legislature and the Republican and the Tea Partiers in particular. And it's not true. And they're trying to blame teachers and say, and they're stating as if it's a fact that the public schools are terrible. The public schools are not terrible. We have 115 districts in North Carolina. There are two or three that had to be taken over by the state where I would not send my child. But the vast, vast majority are great places where the teachers are professionals who care about children. And it is not, certainly the classroom counts, but the family. And the legislature is also increasing poverty, which contributes to weaker student performance and learning. So it's a spiral of political actions that, to me, are very harmful to children.
Well, I think you speak for a lot of almost all of the people who live in Orange County about the feeling that we have about the lack of support that we've gotten from Raleigh in the last few years. On the other hand, you all, thanks to you, are wrestling with what you've got and making the best of it. And I want to talk about what's within our hands to handle and how you all are handling really a very difficult situation. Now, I'm not supposed to talk, but I do have the mic. And talking about what a wonderful job you guys have done. I drove my two of my grandchildren to school today at Ephesus. It made me cry.
Yay, Ephesus.
To drive up to see the kids being welcomed by school officials and by students who are trained to do this, mm-hmm. and happily go into a classroom where they feel safe, secure, assured of having a good experience. So all these tough questions and mean things I'm going to be asking you, it's in the context of being a very appreciative citizen for what you're doing. Now, one of the things that the folks who've asked us to talk to you about, folks are worried about this debate that they don't understand about Common Core. And Tom, can we start with you, and will you educate us about where we are with that to the degree with which we're worried about it? And maybe you can say this is something that's not at the top of our list of things to be worried about.
Well, it is at the top of the list because that's the Common Core reflects what it is our curriculum.
Will you give us a little background?
Well, Common Core was created not by the federal government, but rather by a group of governors. And they proposed having a Common Core set of standards that potentially could be used nationwide rather than each state creating their own standards, and there's no way to compare, and also looking at the state standards and having some of them be rigorous. Massachusetts, for example, had the most rigorous standards, at least by any group that measures these. And to be honest, North Carolina's were pretty low. The Common Core raises the bar to a level that everyone has, it's an equal playing field for all children across the country. I think one of the sad things is a lot of it's being portrayed as the federal government bringing this down upon us, and they get into a states' rights kind of argument, which it wasn't meant to be. We've created our curriculum around the Common Core, which is more about kids thinking. How do kids, teachers ask questions to probe so that there is deeper thinking in our classrooms. It's not memorizing from information, spitting it back in a test. It's really good stuff. We're excited about it, and our teachers have put so much energy in work in learning how to teach to these Common Core State standards. It would be a shame if something happened to that.
Can I, from the standpoint of board chairs and board members, what kind of feedback are you guys getting from parents who've heard these things about Common Core? Donna, you want to go first?
Well,
I'm sorry, Donna Coffey, the chair of the Orange County.
That's okay. There has been lots of concern, and but on the other hand, there's been support also. I think Dr. Fracella makes some excellent points. And we in Orange County are also creating our curriculum around the Common Core. It's around it. Common Core is not necessarily driving it. And I think that Common Core will benefit our students, because our students, we live in a society today that continues to grow increasingly mobile. And this allows students to more easily move from one district to another, and without losing a lot of in-depth curriculum that they may have lost in other situations. So I think there's two sides to it, but I would dare to come down on the side that supports Common Core.
Jim Zetta Bedford, what's it like in the Chapel of Carborough?
We had, of course, to educate our parents, and I think it's been a little bit harder with the math. The kids that are currently, say, in fifth grade through ninth grade, they're the transition students as we transition, where it's no longer Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, Pre-Calculus. Each of those topics is covered, even beginning in elementary school, across a year, so that they can go deeper. And so we do need to inform parents so that they can help their kids with homework. But overall, it's our parents are glad to have their children challenged in the classroom.
Well, that's great. Well, Jeff Hall, from a parent, is nodding, but I've heard a little bit of feedback from teachers. And what are you hearing from how do you feel? And then what are you hearing from your colleagues?
Common Core is an excellent idea. Basically, what it does is it puts us on a level playing field with the rest of the country and the rest of the world. We constantly see that we have some of the best jobs and some of the best economy here in the state of North Carolina in certain regions, but we also have to remember that we have to compete globally. We look at countries like India and China. There are more English-speaking gifted students in those countries than there are here in the United States. That means that technically, our students have to really be pushed. So with that in mind, the Common Core helps us to prepare each and every child to think critically. So whether or not that child is going to try to go to college, which ultimately we want all of them to have that choice, but more importantly, they can think critically. So if the job they're going to have is to simply do problem solving, they'll be better prepared for that.
So
we as teachers,
Common Core is controversial other places, but not here in Orange County and Chapel Hill.
The controversy is the ignorance, because when you use propaganda to push against it for political means, then you lose the true essence. It's like throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, but Jeff, you would you off.
I certainly agree with what Chuck is saying, and I just want to say there's a lot of agreement around this table. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of agreement statewide or nationwide. In fact, just this morning, the Legislative Research Council of the North Carolina General Assembly has recommended that Common Core be eliminated in North Carolina.
Let's come back and talk just a little bit more about Common Core when we get back, because I'm surrounded by good feelings, and I don't think I'm reporting correctly. This has been the first half hour of the hour six of the 2014 WCHL Chapel Hill Community Forum. You got great participants, Tom Fracella, Risa Atkins from the Chapel Hill Carborough school staff, Chuck Hennessy, an educator, Jeff Hall, a parent, and then we've got Donna Coffey and Jim Zetta Bedford, the bosses, as the members and chairs of the Board of Education. We'll take a break and we'll be right back.
Viatri, our mission is to encourage the gathering of family and friends to celebrate and share life. We do this through our handcrafted Italian ceramics for home and garden and through our connection with the local community. We are proud to be a vibrant member of Hillsboro and the surrounding area for over 30 years and to sponsor this year's important WCHL Forum. A family-owned company that encourages collaboration, the sharing of ideas, and the work of many hands, Viatri gives back through fundraising, donations, and volunteerism, and it values the partnerships promoted by today's forum.
Spring is here, and you know what that means. Summer is right around the corner. You definitely want to look and feel your best, so Jersey Mike's Subs invites you to eat healthy with our 99% fat-free turkey, a delicious low-fat choice that's loaded with lean protein and great flavor, piled high with fresh onions, lettuce, and tomatoes, and served on our store-baked white or wheat bread. Eating one is a fantastic way to feel good about yourself. Order online at jerseymikesubs.com or call us at 919-918-SUBS.
Every day at the UPS store, we're proud to support our community and we're proud to help small businesses. That's why we're your community resource for small business solutions. More than packing and shipping, we provide professional printing services, a real street address for business mailboxes, document shredding, secure scanning of documents for digital storage, and more. To learn more about how we can help you with all of your small business needs, stop by the UPS stores on Fordham Boulevard, in Meadowmont, and in Chapel Hill North.
The UPS store, where we have fun taking exceptional care of our customers.
What are your plans for summer? How about getting a head start on college courses at Durham Tech? General online registration for summer term 2014 for all advised students, including those new to the college, newly admitted to a program, visiting students, or returning students, begins April 17th. Students who need to meet with an advisor should schedule an appointment as soon as possible. Summer term classes begin May 19th. For additional information, please visit www.durhamtech.edu/registration.
The Orange County Parks and Recreation Council is hosting a Parks and Recreation Master Plan open house at 6 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, May 1st. This will give residents a chance to see the draft plan and provide feedback on the findings and recommendations for the future of parks and recreation needs for Orange County. The open house will take place at the Eurosports Soccer Center on West 10 Road in Eflin. For more information, please call 919-245-2518. That's 919-245-2518.
Viatri, the largest U.S. importer of fine, handcrafted Italian tableware and home decor, is proud to sponsor this year's WCHL Forum. As a vibrant member of Hillsboro and the surrounding community for over 30 years, Viatri inspires the celebration of life with family and friends through the joy of Italian designs. A family-owned company that encourages collaboration, the sharing of ideas, and the work of many hands, Viatri gives back to the community through fundraising, donations, and volunteerism. And it values the partnerships promoted by today's forum.
You're listening to the 2014 WCHL Community Forum on 97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL and streaming live on our website, chapelboro.com. Once again, here is D.G. Martin.
Well, welcome back to the WCHL Forum. This is hour six, and we're talking about in pre-K through 12 education with a great group of panelists, starting with Tom Frisella, who's the superintendent of Chapel of Carrboro Schools, Arasi Atkins, who is with the human resources director of those schools. Chuck Hennessy is a teacher and president of the Chapel of Carrboro Association of Educators. Jeff Hall is a PTA council president. Jim Zetta Bedford and Donna Coffey are the chairs of the Orange County and the Chapel of Carrboro school systems. And we got firepower. Now, I was surprised, not disappointed, when we brought up the very controversial topic of Common Core. As we went around the table, there was an enthusiastic support for Common Core from teachers, from parents, from the board, and from the superintendent. So why is everybody talking, and is it true that all your teachers are enjoying reframing their method of teaching, Chuck? And
in all frankness, when you have to make a choice, or excuse me, a change from doing something the old way to the new way, you're going to get some pushback. We also have to be very frank about the logistics of the fact that when this came through, it was in an attempt to deal with the funds coming in from Race to the Top. Again, we're dealing with federal funds, which we know is going to be a political hot button. But then once they came in order to get Common Core instituted, when it came in from the State Department of Public Instruction, it came in very quickly. And more time was needed for us to prepare the world-class lessons that were required by the Common Core. So there is some controversy when it comes down to being prepared for Common Core as far as teachers are concerned.
But let's leave Common Core after Tom Forcella tells us. What do you say when you get an angry call from a parent who says, my kid, you've ruined my kid's experience, and they're not getting what I got when I was coming along, and you're change it so that it's not what they need? I bet you've got a practiced speech for that.
I don't get, I think we're very fortunate because in our school district, yeah, we have some pretty educated parents. They understand, and when they take the time to look at what the Common Core is, what it's meant to do, they appreciate it. They want to see their children, not just kids who are going to come into classrooms, memorize information, spit it back on a test and forget about it. They want the deeper thinking. So we haven't had a lot of pushback. There's, as Jim Zetta said, there's been some time we had to take to explain what the math looks like now. I totally agree with Chuck that I think part of the problem with staff is it was too much. It was very quick, and we were just scrambling to retool and retrain our teachers in a process that in 1 year did a lot of work, which in a normal circumstance of a rollout of a program like this could have been a 2 to 3 year implementation.
Well,
so that's been a struggle, but our staff's been very cooperative, I think.
Well, we'll leave that behind. Thanks for the explanation and for the assurance. One of the things that I think all of you during the break said that you'd like to talk about a little bit are the challenges that both school systems face in terms of the facilities, overcrowded. What are the choices? Are you going to build new schools or upfit the renovate the existing ones, and where is the money going to come from? Jim Zetta, Bedford, you brought that up, so you get to go first.
Okay, good. We've spent almost 2 years with the architects and engineers looking at our 10 oldest facilities, 9 schools and Lincoln Center, because they are hitting the 50 and 60 year mark. Glenwood will celebrate their 60th anniversary next Friday. I think it's 2 Fridays from now. So we need to, and some of them were very small. Ephesus is a small, Glenwood's small, under 500, and we have construction standards for the county as well as the state now. And after the shootings in Newtown a year ago, December, Orange County School started with a very comprehensive safety and security review that we then incorporated as well, so that both districts are working together to have apples to apples comparisons, because we are at the point after this recession and over $10 million in CIP, capital improvement budget cuts across 10 years, that we can't get parts anymore, and some of these heating units, some of these other HVAC systems are failing us. And is it, at what point do you say we need to start over, we need to deconstruct and rebuild? How can we modernize it for education? Some of the pods, you know, really aren't the best way to teach. So we were looking at capacity and just bringing it up to code, standards. And the educational facilities, like our newer schools, do have some space for speech and language therapists and social workers, a real school nurse's office that our older schools have had to make do with. And the price tag is very, very large, up, I think, around $160 million just on our side. We expect the same numbers Donna will share in a minute. So we've been talking through our collaboration meeting, which is the chairs from all three local governmental groups, about do we need a bond issue, or are there other ways to fund over time, you know, over a long period of time, some of these renovations and these capital needs, and how do we prioritize them? And I'm sure the county has some needs as well.
Well, Donna Coffey, as she laid out the Orange County viewpoint on this challenge pretty well as well.
She has, and we have our capital needs are along the lines of $160 million also. Half of our schools are 50 plus years old, And as you can imagine, they need upfitting, retrofitting. Our district is growing in the number of students that we have. Next year, we're expected to have more than 200 new students in our district, which is unlike recent history. So as we continue to grow, not only are we going to have to deal with the upfitting our older facilities and making those new again, we're also going to have to deal with building new schools, which is something our district hasn't done in probably close to 10 years now. So that's going to be something for us to really tackle over the next few years. We didn't get this way overnight, however, and we're certainly not going to get out of it overnight. But our capital, the money that we get for our capital projects has decreased over time. Hopefully it will pick back up. As James Etta did mention, we have discussed we haven't gotten into the details about a possible bond referenda in the next few years.
Well, so I think that the news, excuse me for interrupting you, Donna, I really apologize, but that the news is, keep an eye out, we're going to have a political discussion about whether or not we want to vote to sell bonds and to then commit ourselves to repaying the interest and the principal back on those bonds. That's coming up in the next year or two.
I would say the next 2 to 5 years, probably.
Well, let's move on. We've got a question from a call-in.
Okay, we actually have two really good questions, but did we want to stay with Common Core, or did you say?
Well, we'll revisit. If somebody's gotten excited about it, okay. We'll go very quickly to another Common Core question, even though I promised that we were through with it.
Okay, this is from Dr. Barbara Hall. She's had a lot of good feedback. One of her questions is, how can we inform North Carolina legislators how can we inform North Carolina legislators and others that Common Core standards are different than the curriculum that leads to those standards?
All right, well, Tom, that's a question I don't understand exactly, but you've lit up because I think you can explain the question and answer
it. I think what they're asking, and that's a common misunderstanding if I'm understanding the question, that the Common Core is a set of standards. It's not a curriculum that tells you how to teach in your classroom. They are standards that we develop curriculum to reach those standards. And I think the person who wrote in is right in that people are misunderstanding. They think it's a scripted curriculum that's being passed on and that we have to follow.
And I think that's where
Jeff Hall. Go ahead, Jeff.
Yes, sir. I think that's where a lot of the political pushback has come from, is people misunderstanding that, and they think it is a set of curriculum that the federal government is somehow telling teachers what they have to teach in class. It's telling students what they have to learn, and that local entities have no control over what's happening in classrooms, and that's just not true. Now, as to the tweeter's question about how we inform the North Carolina legislators of that, there's more Monday. There's advocacy efforts that we're undertaking as the PTA Council and other groups that Chuck could speak to. We're doing our best to let people know what's really going on.
Well, was there a second part to that question?
Oh, no, this was the second question in general.
I think now I'll declare that we are through with Common Core.
Okay.
But I think that was a great question, and I appreciate the clarification that you gave us.
Okay, this is a question from Matt Bailey, and he says, what's the biggest thing that we can do at the town or county level to convince our experienced and awesome teachers to stay?
Well, this is a question that we've wrestled with a lot already. And Chuck, is there, with the question coming up again, what can we do, and let's don't emphasize what they do in Raleigh, but what can we do here to increase that we haven't talked about, to increase the chances that we can persuade teachers to stay here?
We have been so blessed in this district, and as a Chapel Hill Carborough teacher, when the first set of cuts came through, we did not lose very many positions because they were absorbed through retirement and other positions actually left open. But as time goes on, that's when the difficulty comes. So we've been real blessed because we've been taken care of in the best of situations or in the worst of situations. We also here in Chapel Hill have the highest supplement in the state of North Carolina. And as a result of that, that draws and maintains a lot of the people that we have in this area. We know that Raleigh has turned around and pushed for a 3.5% increase. That's what the superintendent's calling for. Again, we don't know whether or not the commissioners over there are going to go for that, but at the same time, it really comes down to showing support. So when we talk about citizens, we're talking about citizens stepping out and making their voices heard, just as this question can push that debate.
Well, let me ask Horacio Atkins the question that pops into my mind on hearing that while there is a problem with the competitive levels with respect to other states, still within North Carolina, where many people wish to stay and teach, we do have an advantage, this is a question mark, over other school systems.
We do. We're consistently in the top three districts in terms of pay, so overall. But we also have to keep in mind the cost of living here also. We have many teachers that live out of county because of the higher cost of living. So it's all relative. But one of the things that I would like to add in terms of support, just to piggyback on something that Chuck said and what you said, Mr. Martin, earlier about dropping your grandchildren off at Ephesus, we really need to remember to recognize our teachers, because no matter, they're under attack, both in the public education sector, their due process rights, their pay, but we need to never forget that they walk into those classrooms, and all of our staff members, every single day, ready to receive children, and they do the job, and they get the job done. And so just keeping that at the forefront and remembering to restore that professionalism, and that's what they do every day. So sending that message community-wide, seeing what parents can do to help our teachers every day with that knowledge, I think does a tremendous amount.
Because I appreciate you raising it, and I think everybody's listening does as well, that we talk about really wanting to persuade the folks in Raleigh, and that's hard, marching and screaming and writing letters that might not be effective. But you're suggesting that if we do some things personally for our teachers and express our appreciation to them, that might be that might not be everything, but that maybe we neglect to do that as much as we would want to do that.
Absolutely, and just that overall sense of restoring professionalism, because there's this perception with some of the public that teachers are, give you an example about the teacher tenure changes. I think that some of our legislators are misguided. They think that there are so many bad teachers that they have to make these large-scale changes that are detrimental to the entire profession. I could tell you, as an HR director who has to deal with poor performing teachers, the perception is so far off. We have an overwhelming majority of fantastic teachers. There is such a small number of poor performing teachers that some of the legislative policies are totally opposite of what there should be.
Well, let's pursue that for just a minute more, because I think there may be some question as to whether or not the board chairs, the boards, and the superintendent might not like some of these more flexibility that the management of the school systems has to get rid of poor performing teachers without the protection of the tenure. Tom, do you have some mixed feelings about this?
I think there is a process in place, and it is about due process. And I've worked with Ms. Atkins on a number of situations where it's our job as leaders in the district, if we have teachers that are underperforming, it's our job to document what that performance is, present a case, and I think we're on solid ground. And unfortunately, but I think it's our job, we have been able to either counsel some teachers out, which is the way you'd rather do that, because we do want to have the best teachers in our classroom. So it isn't something that we don't do, but as Ms. Atkins says, they are few and far between, the number of teachers, but it is an every year occurrence. And if as the administration, we follow the process, you can do that. And takes a little time, as it should.
Yeah, so you're saying you're comfortable doing it within the old tenure guidelines. And that, I guess what I'm saying, would you be comfortable that even when the tenure is gone, that the management of the school system will follow these kinds of procedures that will be protective of teachers, even though the state doesn't require them to do that?
In most cases, yes, but we're dealing with individuals. And anytime the threat of not being able to ask why is on the table. That's when the real problem. One of the big problems for us as teachers is we constantly refer to this situation as tenure. There have always been any one of 11 reasons for which teachers could be released. The right to due process that has been eliminated simply means that when you are approached with the end of your job, you have the opportunity to look at your administrator, your school board, or your superintendent and say, why am I being let go? With this new law, you can't even ask.
Let me just ask the chairs. Is the due process, which is being eliminated as a requirement, something that the board would want to insist that our teachers would have, even without the state mandate for that?
You're asking if we would still want due process for our teachers? Absolutely.
Similar to what the tenure requirements used to require.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This is Donna Coffey from Orange County talking.
And I would agree completely with Dr. Fracella. There are instances where you have to go through a process to counsel a teacher or remove a teacher, but there's always the right for due process, and I think that's important, and so I would say yes.
Our board was on record that we would certainly want due process through up to an appeal to the board, and first usually they appeal to the superintendent before it would be an appeal to the board. We haven't discussed whether there should be an automatic appeal to a district administrative court. We just haven't discussed
that. I think that's we're sort of in the same ballpark, and I'm just arguing that this is an advantage in terms of recruitment, I guess, Ross, if you can assure teachers that there's in place the kind of protective due process system.
Absolutely. And some of the reasons cited for teachers possibly looking to go back to their home states is the loss of tenure. And so that is absolutely a retention tool and a recruitment tool.
Well, we're running out of time, and you guys feel free to jump in. One of the questions that we always have to ask is how are we doing on the achievement gap? And I know that what you're going to say is, well, look at our progress on the dropout rate. I'll ask the chairs to talk about, are you proud of what we're doing, and what do we need to do? What do we need to continue being proud of our progress?
Well, we just had our best year ever. I think it was 23. Is that the right number? We had 23 dropouts. And when you figure there's about 350 at one high school and another high school and 300, and that's amazing. Any one child is too many. And so we always reach out. You figure, unfortunately, at least probably one is in rehab and have other extenuating family circumstances or medical circumstances. But the way we are working at Northside to pilot some our new elementary school, some different ways to use time and staff to see by, maybe everyone doesn't need to come in immediately when school opens. Maybe we'll stagger. We are staggering some shifts. Maybe we'll have some lead teachers at a grade level. They're not getting paid anything, but they're going to be able to coach within that school to see if by keeping kids a little bit after school without costing any more dollars, can we help students achieve at a higher level and close some of those gaps. And pre-K is a big, big part of our initiatives to help children be ready by kindergarten. So we're hoping for some additional federal dollars in that area. But there's always more we can do. And one of the things I would like to see eventually is, can we do some night school? You know, could one of our high schools coordinate that? Because we have young parents who need that diploma, kids who are working, who have other family obligations that most of our community would not be aware of. And with technology, we need to have some certified staff there, because technology can't do it all. But with technology, we might be able to afford that. And there are other ways that we can continue to look at our models. And we are shifting through the Institute for Learning and training, we are shifting our classroom instruction and that focus on critical thinking, on that focus on true learning and keep trying and grit. And that will help over time close some of these gaps.
Donna Coffey, is she speaking for you again?
Well,
I get in trouble for that.
I will agree that it does start with pre-K. We have implemented an excellent literacy program in Orange County Schools, the Hold Apart. I think individual schools need individual plans for success. And, you know, of course, what one student dropping out is one student too many. One of the things that Orange County Schools has been able to do, and it's one of the biggest decisions our board has made in probably the last 10 years, but it's to transition our classrooms from the traditional classroom style of learning with paper and books to more of a digital environment. Every third grader through 12th grader in our district has a laptop assigned to them. All of the middle schoolers and high schoolers are allowed to take those home. And our classrooms are becoming more digital. Our lessons are provided online. And because the future leaders that we're preparing in our schools these days, they are the digital natives, for lack of a better term. And we need to be thinking of how we can better embrace them and bring them along. And this is one way that we've been able to do that. We were able to do that thanks to the voters of Orange County a couple of years ago for the approval of the quarter cent sales tax, and we've taken our share and invested that in technology for our students.
Well, we're moving towards the close, and thanks to you all for sort of some closing remarks. I want to be sure that we give everybody else the chance to say what is on his or her mind to the extent we haven't been able to talk about it. And Chuck Hennessy, we'll begin with you.
I think most importantly that we as teachers love what we do. We love our children, we love our jobs, and we love working in the state of North Carolina. We typically and wholly appreciate all of the thanks that we get from our parents. And at this point in time, it is so important that they move out and make sure that their voices are heard. This is the problems that we run into in education are not a partisan issue. They are a bipartisan issue. So what we would like people to do is to make sure that they get out and make sure their voices are heard, make sure that they take part in the political process of voting, and we will do everything that we can do from within the classroom to make sure that our kids achieve at the highest level they can.
Well, thanks to you and thanks to your colleagues who are teaching our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Jeff Hall, you're a parent.
Yes, sir.
What concluding remarks would you like to make?
Earlier this year, the PTA Council did a survey of staff members in the Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools. And one of the things that we heard from them, really there were two things. One, they want for parents to show their appreciation, as we've talked about, in little ways by being involved in class and being involved in school life, but also to be involved in the political process, to advocate for our schools on the local and state level. So, as Chuck said, getting involved, understanding the issues, knowing the facts about what's going on, and then finding a way to get involved. At the PTA Council, we're very involved in advocacy. It's what we do, and we're really trying to lead the way to get parents to step up and have their voice be heard so that we can continue to have the excellent schools that exist in the city and county here.
Well, I'd like to move now to Rossi Atkins, who deals with the problems that teachers have every day. What have we missed?
Sure. Well, just really piggybacking on what Chuck and Jeff said, we really just need to keep these issues at the forefront. I think it needs to be a consistent and a long-term message. We need to keep teacher pay issues and teacher retention issues really at the forefront and get the community involved in the political process.
Thank you. Tom Frisella, reserved a few minutes for you to give us sort of a report on the status of the schools to the extent that we haven't covered it already.
Well, I think as bad as things are, especially coming from the state level, there are a lot of exciting things happening in our schools. Most importantly, that we've worked very hard in the past couple of years to create a common philosophy with regard to our belief system. And we believe that all children have abilities. We believe in something called the growth mindset. that
a
growth mindset, that children all have abilities, and if we provide the right kind of instruction, we provide time for learning, that all kids can learn at higher levels. And the nice thing about this is our entire staff has bought into this concept. We're focusing on our instruction. If we had time, Chuck can talk about his AVID program. We can talk about other programs that we have that really are created with this idea in mind, that every child has ability that will address our achievement gap, and it will also address the learning of our high-achieving kids. And our teachers have really bought into the concept and the idea that every child in our schools can learn at high levels.
Well, Tom, thank you. I've got just a minute more, and I shorted the chairs because they had time to talk before, but is there a concluding remark that either of you would like to make? Donna's pointing at Jimzetta, and Jimzetta's pointing at Donna.
I think we are all very fortunate to have such strong public support for our schools across this county, and we are counting on it. We have so many thousands of volunteers, UNC students, retired citizens, parents, who help out across both districts as well, and we want to thank them all. And we especially thank our teachers and our faculty and staff.
Well, thanks. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to Tom Frisella, Rasa Atkins, Chuck Hennessy, Jeff Hall, and, of course, our chairs, Donna Coffey and Jimzetta Bedford, and our representative of the parents, Jeff Hall. This has been a great experience for me. I thank you, and I'm sure our listeners would want me to thank all of you, not just for what you did today, but what you do every day. This is D.G. Martin. We've concluded with hour six of the WCHL Community Forum. I hope that you will stick with us and join us for the seventh hour, which will come up in just after this short break.